The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, 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 what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 521. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight, we're joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Coming in right in the nick of time, Mr. Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And, as always, Brian Mangioma.
What's up, what's up?
All right, guys, you already know, back with another one. I'm going to start the show off. Oh, yeah. What's up?
There's one thing we need to do before we even start.
Yeah, well, actually, before we even start, there is one thing. This is a little bit weird, but I'm going to do it because fuck it. I'm giving myself a shout out. Shout out to me for my 45th birthday, bro. you know?
That was what I was doing.
Yeah, I beat you to it.
It never sounds right when you're doing it yourself.
Meh, fuck it, anyway. I did it.
It's like my show.
Yeah, fuck it. It's 45 years, man. It's crazy, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, so I want to give a shout out. So the reason, I mean, obviously the main reason I want to do this is because I want to give a shout out to the fans who are giving me a lot of love in Discord today. So thank you to you guys, you know? But yeah, man, if you want to say something, go right ahead.
Well, you know, happy birthday.
Yay.
You
know?
Probably said it a few times already in our personal chat. Yep. But yeah, happy birthday, and I hope you had a good one. I hear you had some foods.
Oh, Dominican food, man. Chicharrones, morcillas. Oh, man, I was good. I mean, it fucking guineitos, like some arroz con guandule. I was good, bro. Like, I had it all, man. I haven't eaten like that in a while. Probably since Christmas. I know that doesn't sound too long. My sister came through with that food. Woo. You know, but this is, and it's crazy because, like, there's very few places in New York that have, like, good chicharrones. Like, you have to go to the Bronx for this shit. Like, that's where my sister picks it up from, you know?
What about the Dominican place that you see near your place?
They didn't serve him. They didn't serve that stuff.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
That place?
Yeah, you know the chicharrones, like the small little pork, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't serve that stuff.
Those guys didn't do it?
Yeah. Most Dominican places don't have fritura, as we call them, like, just fried shit, you know?
Huh.
Like, they have mango for days, obviously, and a bunch of other stuff, platanos. But yeah, no, a lot of them just don't have fucking chicharrones, you know, or morcilla. So it was good. Good times. And obviously, it was all indoors because it was disgusting outside. Although I will say, a lot better than snow, which is what usually happens on my birthday, you know?
It's been looking like Silent Hill for the last few days.
Yeah.
It's all foggy. And
the irony that winter is my most hated season. My birthday is literally in the smack middle of it, you know? And then according to that fucking groundhog, winter's supposed to last longer. So it's like, God damn, this is not going to be fun, you know? Bubba Bass Anglers in the house. You may know him as Mr. Torrance Davis.
Excuse me?
Chicharrones is another word for balls. Nah, maybe in your world, Torrance, you know? Crazy.
No, that's huevos.
Huevos, yeah. Man, if Torrance had the Dominican food, man, he'd be done, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get into it. Man, we got some questions tonight. Not a lot of them, you know, but yeah, thanks, Torrance. Appreciate that. Let's get into it, man. Black Metal Gamer starts us off. Right. PlayStation seems to rely on third-party game sales to stay in the green, effectively operating as a console version of Steam. Should PlayStation reduce the budget and streamline the game development process so it can release first-party games faster? I mean, that's something all these companies need to do, you know, streamline the fucking process and stuff. But I don't know. But here's the thing. I said this on the last show, too. Sony, in a way, doesn't have an incentive to release first-party games, even without a lot of first-party games. They're still winning, you know, but that's on account of their main competition, Xbox, just doing horribly, you know, and Nintendo is not their competition at all, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, also, I think they decided to go down the road of doing a service game. And, you know,
ooh, we got a question about that later, by the way.
A lot of this, these service games have taken up the field. They made this decision, and now where are we? The time frames make sense. You know, even you know, despite the service, well, most service games not having the same sort of development time, they're not supposed to last 5 to 6 years, but yeah. You know, they're supposed to be smaller budgeted things that they could literally push out and then essentially develop it while it's still out on the field. But you notice that we have seen next to none of them. One of them got canceled before it even did anything. So
yeah, Concord.
So awful, they canceled it. Yeah, so yeah. They're probably gonna, you know,
Destruction All Stars didn't go anywhere.
Destruction All Stars didn't go anywhere. Was Foam Stars considered one of those things too?
Not sure, but that was yeah, no, but that was
Sony though.
That was
Enix. Not Sony, but yeah. I mean they. Officially, that game is the only that the PlayStation is the only console that things have shown up on. It hadn't shown up on Xbox or PC.
But it's still, but you know, just to be clear,
I mean, it's not a first party game, but it is definitely. It might. I don't know what the full deal is. It seems like it's, you know, second
It's not. It's a third party exclusive. Square Enix is not. So, it's not like some company that's beholden to Sony. But anyway, we're getting off track. But regardless, you're right. It's like these service games are, you know, you would think they would come out faster, but they take just as long as any other game to develop. So what's the point? Well, you know?
Yeah, I think it was just an awful. And again, obviously, a company wants to try these things because, again, like Yoshida said, even service games are easy to justify to the executives. Yeah. The bean count.
Fortnite. You know, that's all they got to say.
You know, like Fortnite or, you know, any of the other ones. But again, like, that's such a hard space to deal with, you know, compete in. Because if everybody's playing Fortnite and if everybody's playing Overwatch or Valorant, what room is there in this space for these other things? I mean, granted, one of their biggest, their only success in this was a sequel, Helldivers 2. But that's it.
Yeah. I don't know. So I don't know what the hell Sony could do really to start pumping out more first party games.
I mean, the obvious thing would be to lower the scope, smaller titles,
Sean Layden,
smaller titles, smaller teams, right? You know, go with instead of having a AAA team of like over 200 people working on a title, like the folks that worked on God of War or the, you know, Last of Us or, you know, or your Horizon Zero Dawn, you go with 100 person teams, almost the size, which is considered a middle A team.
Brian, doesn't that sound like something they used to have?
Yes.
A certain studio from a certain region of the world.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like something that they have now, like a certain astronomical robot.
Yes.
Yes. Which, by the way, that game, that studio has only 65 people working.
Yeah, but man, you obviously, I know you're 100%, but you know what studio we're talking about. It's Japan studio. Yes. They had that.
Japan.
You know? Yeah. But remember, Sony got into that rut of like, oh no, everything used to be big blockbuster, you know?
Everything used to be a big blockbuster. It's always been like, again, change of leadership just sort of, you know, lost them what they really have. And again, now you have all the people that made, most of the people that have been around classically from the era of Sony from the beginning or PlayStation from the beginning are all gone. Yoshida's gone. All those guys are all gone. And they could have told, they probably could have said the same thing at the same time. Hey, listen, no, not everything needs to be a big budget, insane sort of game. We got to fill in the spaces with smaller, with middle A titles and essentially bring them up to those AAA standard, you know, like you can like it does well. All right, but just a sequel, bigger budget, do a sequel. All right, make that even bigger, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway,
Kishak says they had that studio, but the people weren't supporting them. They weren't selling as much as Sony wanted them to, so that's what happened. But it's like you shouldn't have expectations of those studios like that, you know?
I think the thing about it is that they always came under budget. They always, you know, they did moderately well But I mean, if they're only just expecting these every single studio under their umbrella to be being billion-dollar sellers, they are definitely got something seriously wrong over there.
Yeah, yeah. What about the rest of you guys? Chime in. What do you think about all this?
I feel like Sony's leading into a path where console sales being number one on console sales, at least in relativity to Microsoft, is only going to take them as far. You know, this whole notion where they're just going to rely on third party to prop up their console and you know, having all this you know, service games which they're already backtracking on already, and you know, maybe you know, a Naughty Dog game every 7 years, maybe a Santa Monica game every 7 years, and maybe another Sucker Punch game every 5 years. I don't think that's going to cut it.
Yeah.
So they need to change something, or they're going to, I don't know, man. I just feel like I haven't been a fan of what PlayStation's been doing for years now. And like you mentioned, yeah, they're on top, but this whole hubris of how they handle things is just, I don't see it just carrying on. I feel like, you know, eventually it's just going to lead to a point where it's not going to be sustainable.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's what Sean Layden has been saying forever. And when he originally said that, people ridiculed him. But now they're not laughing anymore, you know?
Well, because they don't even give you the like, remember, it was like the third-person studio, like PlayStation's a third-person narrative studio. They hardly even give you that anymore.
Yeah, no, they don't really do that. I don't even know what the hell they do anymore, to be honest.
Well, like, everyone's too focused on chasing the live service whale.
Yeah.
Not focusing on narratives, like Carlos said. And the live service chase causes budgets to blow out of proportion, right? You have these huge online multiplayer pursuits. Look at the budget of Concord. You know, I guarantee whenever Fair Games happens, look at the budget for that. There's just, instead of putting that money into smaller story-driven games, with IPs that they have a ton of IPs that they sit on that are languishing, you know, bring back Infamous, bring back Sly Cooper, bring back, you know, there's so many, you know, bring back the Twisted Metal, make a good one, anything, right? But it doesn't need, everything doesn't need to fall under, oh, we need live services. No, because unless you hit with it, unless you can displace another popular live service things, you will languish because nobody's going to drop whatever the hot game is to pick up your game just because it's live service. Unless you are offering something that, you know, Fortnite or, you know, Helldivers is not offering, nobody's going to leave those titles to jump on yours.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have Call of Duty diehards. Sony doesn't have those guys where they're on the next thing. They're not feeding them. You don't have them hooked on that, you know, like that. So it's tough, but they keep chasing it. And they keep mentioning it. And it's like, stop. Like, you could, for the budget that you spent on Concord, you could have developed three or four smaller, you know, either single player or even, you know, local multiplayer, whatever, story-driven games. But you didn't, right? And what happened to that? It's flushed that money down the toilet.
Yeah. I want to read this statement from Kishak because it is a good point. The quarterly report that we read on Thursday from PlayStation seems to be that the online discourse, which we're having now, on PlayStation doesn't reflect reality at all. Goes back to my earlier point. Yeah, like guys like us are complaining, but Sony's still making money at the end of the day doing what they're doing now. So what incentive do they have to change course? You know,
exactly.
They have to lose money, and they're not losing money yet.
They are losing money. Doing write-offs is not sustainable either.
That's a good point.
The reason that report looks good is because they wrote off Concord. They basically erased it, you know, so they could get a tax write-off. That's going to bite them in the ass later this year, I guarantee.
That's a good point.
But for now, it looks great, right? The dividends look good and everything looks great. If everything was so great, Fair Games would be launching when it was planned to, unless there's problems. There's no technical problems. Fair Games is going to change because they realize that the road that they've gone down, that's not selling, you know?
Yeah.
And you know what I'm talking about. If you've seen the game, you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And we had a question about that. I'm really glad you brought that up because that is a good point. It's like they didn't mention Concord in that. That report would have looked a lot different if they had taken that game into account, you know.
And also, you know, obviously they say they're doing the same number as they are. They're doing equivalent numbers to what they were doing on the, you know, from the PlayStation 4 era. But it's the same. But the thing is that the consoles cost more.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's like, again, software is key. You know, I don't, it doesn't, yes, okay, the console's doing, you know, still making money. That's great. It makes you, that allows you to make more consoles and stuff like that. But again, they're severely lacking in the software sector on their own.
Yeah. I mean, the Sony isn't even the number one publisher anymore. It's Microsoft.
Yeah, it is Microsoft. Yeah. That's crazy. All right, man. Moving on here. Another question for Black Metal Gamer. Another question about PlayStation. Can PlayStation's new Japanese-centered leadership help steer the company in a better direction? I sure hope so. I sure hope so. Chris, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the course correction is coming from there and that they realize the problem. I think they do. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been a sea change at the C-level executive, right? You know, they would have just let Herman Holtz probably escalate to that level or hire somebody else like Jim Ryan. But they didn't. They put a Japanese dude in there. And they see what the problem is. Also, there are layoffs actively happening at SIE in San Francisco. They have to cut the dead weight. They have to cut a lot of this problems that Jim Ryan has created and course correct heavily. And this is pretty much the only way to do it. Tony and I have said this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest mistakes Sony made in the Jim Ryan era is moving their headquarters to San Francisco. That was one of the biggest mistakes they made. And I don't care if you're like, well, they're making money. Not really. No, they're losing money. They're just writing it off. There's a systemic rot in PlayStation that has been created from doing that. And the only way to fix it is it has to come from outside. It has to come back from Japan. So I'm really have my fingers crossed, and I can't read this guy's mind. I don't know his position, and I haven't seen an interview with him or anything. If I do, I will speak on it. But I'm very much have faith that he is going to make those corrections, and it seems like he's already started. It's going to take a while for that to bear fruit, though. Like him coming in a month ago or 2 months ago, whenever he was appointed, it's not a lot of time. There are projects in the works. There's things he has to make decisions on, whether to cut, what to put into the pipeline, like, and all that takes years to bear fruit. So it's going to take a while to see the results of that.
Go ahead, Carlos. Go ahead, bro.
I agree with Chris. You know, it's not like a politician that, you know, they throw out their ideas and their platform and stuff. We have no clue what this guy stands for.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, Sony and the way they want to make games. So, you know, we're kind of just, you know, sitting around in a Monster Hunter game, you know, getting someone off an SOS flare, a Japanese coming in, we thinking they're saving us. Hopefully this guy does save Sony. But, you know, I can't really speak on it, you know, intelligently. Because I just have no clue who this person is and what they stand for and what they want Sony to be in the future, what their mission statement is.
Yeah, all I'll say is, of course, it's San Mateo, by the way, where they're based out of right now. But, you know, I'm still going to use this regardless because I think it's a good quote. Basically, Sony needs to stop upholding San Francisco values and uphold Japanese values, you know. So that'll be a good thing. Stop all that fucking West Coast bullshit, because it's not good. Concord, that's all I need to say about that. But like you guys said, we also don't know what this dude's about. So, you know, we'll see. But
I mean, there was some earlier things talking about even with the when they did the interim president of PlayStation. Before the SIE, which he did sort of mention the online and all that other stuff, and then that was before Jim Ryan took the seat. So they were definitely looking at the industry and saying, okay, they were looking at the industry and thinking, okay, America and all this sort of stuff, you know, this stuff is the future. Also, let's also add that, you know, yes, granted, Sony, you know, PlayStation is doing well, but it's not doing amazingly in Japan.
Yeah, that's true.
This is mostly the Western world that's sort of, you know, a lot of these numbers are coming.
Yeah, I mean, they're not really doing a lot of Japanese-style type of games. not really. It's all been focused on the quest, like you said. So, yeah, hopefully this new guy will steer the ship correctly. But we'll see.
I have a question.
Why is it?
Why is it?
Yeah, what's up?
So you brought up something interesting. I'm curious, what type of, like, who could bring those types of games to for Sony? Yeah, because they've laid off
you pretty mean, like, much studios anyone. And shit?
Yeah, because, you know, Team Asobi is probably the only one.
You're right, because who do they have? You know, they laid all the people that would be able to make those games. Team Asobi, they're still there, but Japan Studios gone.
I mean, Team Asobi is built off of, you know,
yeah,
some people that were left over from, you know, Japan Studio. But I don't foresee them ever putting out something like a Shadow of the Colossus or anything like that. To be honest, yeah. I'm almost afraid that they're just going to be continue to be the Astrobot Studio.
Yeah, that's a good point. Kishak says, I feel like we should also clarify that just because he's Japanese doesn't mean he'll be better for the job. I think we said that. We said we don't know enough about this guy. I'm hopeful that he is, and I'm just speaking for myself. I think a Japanese person should be heading PlayStation, not a Westerner. That's my opinion, though.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, you had for the previous two heads of PlayStation were two Westerners.
Yeah, they did pretty good. That's true. Sean Layden and
Andrew House.
And the big difference between those guys is they were also bilinguals and they've been with the studio for a while.
Yeah, to be fair, fucking Ryan's been there for a long time too. You know, although I don't think he's bilingual. You know,
no, he wasn't bilingual. In fact, his
fuck
his,
the Japanese.
Well, I think he was a leftover from Sony Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah, but yeah, he was definitely a lifer. But yeah, you know, again, we'll see about this guy, but got to be better than Ryan. We've been asking for Ryan to let go for years, so we got that at least, you know? All right, let's move on here. Assyrian Air Force was also joining us in the chat tonight. With PlayStation showing a lot of third-party games at State of Play, will any of them become console exclusive with PC releases like Black Myth Wukong? Probably, you know.
Well, I mean, like, Black Myth is a weird situation because they don't have a lot of experience doing sort of cutout, at least from what they say is they don't have a lot of experience like console type games and also kind of cutting down a lot of their titles. They apparently have only been able to see titles. So it may need some additional time from there. And remember you got to remember, especially with that studio or most Japanese studio, Chinese studio, is they don't really develop console games there.
Yeah, they don't.
PC games are the games that they put out there because, you know, PlayStations and Nintendos and all that sort of stuff had to be licensed to their own specific manufacturers in their own country because just the way Chinese stuff works.
Yeah. Wasn't Black Myth, and I'm glad you asked it because this was the second part of your question, which I didn't understand because I don't understand how it ties into PlayStation. Wasn't Black Myth Wukong Black Myth Wukong hard developed for Xbox Series S? I don't remember. But again, I don't understand what that has to do with PlayStation.
They mentioned that the Series S was an issue with them developing the Xbox version. And also, Xbox has seems to have a mandate that all of their games are on all of their versions of their console. So yeah, they can't just choose a favorite. So I'm guessing that's what the issue is on their end. And that's what they've said classically. Said, oh, yeah, it's difficult to do that sort of thing. We got to cut everything down. I mean, the smart move would be, you know, they hire a porting studio, somebody who's more familiar, who's, you know, obviously, you know, is familiar with Unreal Engine and is able to essentially to cut the game down for the Xbox Series S itself. That would be the smart move. But to be honest, they're kind of at the best place they could possibly, because if you think about it, talking about game sales, not a lot of game sales on that other side of the road.
Hmm.
that's part of the reason why they're rolling all their big titles over to the other consoles, because they're not getting any sales on their side of the fence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't think we'll ever see, you know, speculation. I don't think we'll ever see Black Myth Wukong unless Microsoft or Xbox is able to produce significant sales on their console and platform, or they specifically make a deal with them to work with their studio to essentially, you know, port the game. But I don't think on their own they're going to do it.
Yeah, that probably not. Kishak says it seems like the China Hero Project is working great for Sony since we're seeing more Chinese games being shown at their shows. Yeah, we had Black Myth, obviously, Tides of Annihilation. I don't know about any other ones, but those are pretty big. And he says, I bet the same thing is going to happen in India from PlayStation with the India Hero Project. Two big emerging markets for PlayStation. I mean, look what happened to Wukong. That game success is attributed to, you know, the Chinese market. It sold a lot, you know, in fucking China. There's a lot of people there, you know.
It's a P, you know, I would say the, you know, it's a PC title. So obviously in China, yeah, PC games just do gangbuster.
Yeah. And this is like a big AAA game. So obviously, yeah, they were going to go ham. What's up, Carlos?
On pretty much what Manny mentioned. Yeah. Like, I'm curious what percentage of them were just PC gamers. I'm pretty sure the majority of them were.
I would think, but you know, I don't know how those numbers, but that's a good question. It's Lost Soul aside Chinese? Or is that, thank you, Brian. Because I wasn't sure if it was Korean or Chinese. So there you go. It's another one. Is that part of
it's Chinese.
Yeah. Is that also part of the China Hero Project?
I don't know when the project started, so I'm not too certain.
Yeah. But yeah, Brian, what's your thoughts on this? You know, PlayStation, you know, exclusives and PC and all that.
There's nothing really much that I can say that has not been said, to be fair with you guys. So again, I think it's fascinating. And Manny makes a very good point that Xbox doesn't really get many sales, so maybe that's why we're not seeing anything coming to Xbox. I just looked at Lost Soul Aside, and it's not set coming out on Xbox. So it's another PlayStation PC title. So yeah, that makes sense. That's all I really can say about that.
Cool.
Again,
yeah,
I think it's just one of those situations where unless Xbox somehow gets the sales up off the platform, then chances are we'll just see more of this type of thing. And also because I think it's fun. It's just funny how we're getting these types of games from like the East again. So it seems like it's like a second resurgence of Eastern games, which is great.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Brian, because you actually clarified. Yeah, because I was confused by the question. But I guess the question really was like, if you have a company like you know, the developers of Black Myth Wukong, like, okay, we're going to put our game on PC, PlayStation. We're not going to bother with the Xbox. I guess that was the heart of the question. Yeah, especially with the Series S. Yeah, I don't blame them. Why would you want to go through that shit? Limit the scope of your game. You know, I mean, granted, you're kind of limiting the scope of your game by putting it on PlayStation as well. Let's just be honest, you know, but still, but you're not, but you're limiting it. You're limiting it, the scope in terms of like what you could do with it because of the hardware, but you're expanding the scope because of the player base. But even then, Black Myth, I'm pretty sure, would have done very well even without PlayStation, you know. Most of us here believe this game probably sold most of its game sales on PC. But being on PlayStation definitely helps, you know? It'll be interesting for sure. By the way, Asir Nerfers, I moved your other question to later because I want to keep all the PlayStation questions together, but I'll get to your other one as well. Kish, that goes, I'm betting Black Myth helped PlayStation cement a foothold in China. Maybe. Again, I think that game in China probably sold almost all copies on PC, you know?
Yeah, because there was a point where that game was only going to be a PC exclusive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I don't really think it moved the needle in terms of PlayStation sales in China. I think motherfuckers just bought it on PC.
Yeah, I think they just, I agree. I think China is classically a PC.
Yeah.
You know, it's more Japan and it's more like, you know, that's more of the concept. Even then, she's sort of moving a different direction.
Yeah.
But I think definitely it it being available on PlayStation also was significant, because it is, you know, I think it definitely made money on the console, just given the, you know, how impressive the game looked even from those early things. There was a lot of it. You remember when it first showed?
It was crazy. Man,
it was crazy, right? So I think definitely one of
those. I mean, it's still crazy. That's a good-looking game, man.
It's one of those showcase type of titles, right? So I think it definitely impressed people. I think people wanted to play it. And, you know, I don't think it was like China numbers, but I think it was good enough to warrant that release.
Yeah. Kishak goes, so why are the developers moving to consoles if they're primarily a PC user base, moving to PlayStation? Because, you know, go ahead, Manny.
I would say the reason why is because of the deal that you just spoke about. Sony sees, PlayStation sees something in these titles, and there's also something seriously lacking within their own space. So they make these deals, these sorts of deals, to essentially bolster the titles that are exclusive to their console. It's, you know, it's like it's the same idea. The paid exclusive sort of deal, but it's not nearly as, you know, bad as what, like, stuff like Activision, stuff like that. It's not those sort where they, you know, they have the timed exclusive. Obviously, even Wukong Studio said it. They all have the option to release on the other console, but on the Xbox. But at the same time, with the S in the way, they don't see that as a viable option. And not to mention, if nobody's making any money on an Xbox, why the hell are you going to release it on there? You know how much it is to essentially release a title on a different platform? They don't just give you that shit. They'll probably spend more money porting the game and working with Xbox, unless Microsoft themselves come to the table and says, all right, we really want to have your own game on our console, so we're going to put in the extra effort to try to get this thing to work. That's the only option that I can see that will get those things onto it. If Microsoft themselves said, all right, we'll work with you guys to essentially get this thing out on. I don't like what Sony did.
All right, good stuff. All right, we got a couple questions from one of our favorite fans, Drunken Demon. Great name. All right. How should PlayStation compensate players who were not signed up for PlayStation Plus, but who were affected by the outage? For no reason whatsoever, I'm going to let Brian start this one off. How do you think they should be compensated?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Fantastic question.
Because as far as I know, they haven't outlined anything for them. It's only the ones that were subscribed get the extra days. So if you're not subscribed and you were affected by the outage, then what do you get? Shafted?
So just to clarify, people who are not signed up to PlayStation but were affected, it's like people who are playing like Fortnite or some shit?
Yeah, because if this thing was that you couldn't sign in, then all those games that require sign in, they didn't work, right?
Yeah.
So if you're a guy who just will say, oh yeah, you know, let me just, again, as you said, play some Fortnite, play some free-to-play games, and you couldn't sign in, then you were still affected. So what do you get?
Nothing. That's what you get. You don't get nothing.
I mean, a free-to-play game.
They should. That'd be nice.
They should, but I mean, there's also the thing about Fortnite is you can play Fortnite wherever you want.
Kishak goes, they weren't paying for the service, so why should they be compensated?
Well, I mean, they were affected by it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how many free apps do you use, and then something goes down, and you get something for it?
So. Yeah. So it's like, okay, you know, obviously, are people who are Fortnite players that play just the free version of Fortnite, which doesn't, you know, use the PlayStation. You know, you don't need to have PlayStation Plus to run, supposedly, right? So, and you don't, let's say you don't have a PC, you know, maybe you don't want to play it on your stupid ass cell phone. I mean, granted, you know, there are more options to play those titles, but yeah, there should be a little compensation for something. I don't know. You know, if you're logged in only on a PlayStation, maybe you get a little bit of extra costumes or something just for the fact you couldn't even be playing. Who knows?
Yeah. People in the chat are saying, kind of agreeing with us, like, hey, they were affected. You know, Kishak goes, my ISP goes down all the time, but I don't get jack shit for it. They should be lucky to get 5 days of service, but they're not getting that, you know? They're not getting anything extra, and they were affected. So, you know, in my opinion, they should be compensated.
Your ISP goes down, and you don't complain to your cable company? I mean, every single time my shit goes down, I call those punks up and get some money off on my cable bill.
It is very rare when my ISP goes down, but when it does, they get a call. What the fuck? I'm paying for this shit, you know?
Yeah, we're paying. If you're paying for the shit, yeah, call them up.
Don't give in to them like that, bro.
Yeah,
I only have one ISP provider, and you shouldn't take that bullshit from them. You know,
exactly.
Back when I lived in the projects and I was stuck with Time Warner, that shit would go. I had their number memorized, bro, because it went down all the time. Mm-hmm. I was always calling them up, and I couldn't move to another one. But still, you got to get. You know, you can't let them. You know, fuck you. Let's just be honest. You know, assholes. Like basically, make life uncomfortable for them because they're making life uncomfortable for you. You know. All right. So yeah. Anybody else have any questions? How PlayStation fans who are not signed up to PS Plus could be compensated? I think a free game would be good. I think that's a good one.
Free game or some, you know, maybe if you're a Fortnite player, you play a little, you know, you get some cool content.
Yeah, that will also depend on the developer, because like Monster Hunter, obviously, they're giving you a free date, you know?
Yeah, they gave extra time for all of those titles.
Yeah, so. And everybody wins off of that one, even the Xbox and PC guys.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah. All right, anybody else? Compensation.
The free game, I don't know, because it's like they barely give free games away with the PlayStation Plus subscription, but you don't get to keep those games. So it's like, that seems like a very charitable thing for Sony to do that.
Yeah,
no one would ever anticipate.
Yeah, they're not gonna do it. Let's just be honest.
Well, hold on a second. So Carlos, are you saying that you don't want a free version of The Last of Us Part 2 remastered for your trouble?
It's not that I wouldn't like that. It's more like there's no way in hell Sony would ever do that. you know how they are, man. They won't give anything away. And if they give you something away, it's like it comes with a crutch where it's like, you need PlayStation Plus. You know, they got to have something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Free copy of Destruction All Stars.
Yeah, there you go, kid.
Hey, kid. Oh,
like,
man.
Do you like service games?
Do you like service games? Ultimate compensation from Jolly Yellow Nerd. Free copy of Concord for all affected players.
Yeah, you get a defunct game.
Yeah, there you go. That's funny, man.
Put it on your wall. Be like,
yo, you guys are crazy.
My PlayStation Network went down, and all I got was games.
Yeah, break Concord. Trash. All right, another one from Mr. Drunken Demon. How do you feel about fair games being pushed to 2026? I heard Richard Bailey Jr. is very devastated about this. He was looking forward to it.
All right, well, I would like to respond to this question directly for our friend, the birthday boy, Mr. Tony Polanco. Yes. First and foremost, this is a phenomenal question. Let me say, it's fair to say I don't give a damn about this game. All right, now, let's say this. Now, Sony can delay it, obviously, but if we've learned anything from Concord, it doesn't matter how long the game is in development. If the concept is garbage, then it will continue to be garbage. So we know that Jade Raymond is working on this title. It feels as though she's worked on a lot of titles in this industry. Some of the stuff is, you know, like Assassin's Creed. I like the work she did on Assassin's Creed, but it feels like if she does make a game, it's it could go either way. It sometimes still gets a little bit of a pass because they think that they all are praising the work that she did on Assassin's Creed. But I'm not sold on this game. And obviously Sony's strategy of the live service stuff, I don't think it's going to be successful, at least not, probably not with this game. I mean, I don't know. We haven't seen anything yet, but as far as it getting delayed, I don't care about this because I probably won't be playing it next year.
There you go. So. By the way, quick shout out to Torrance for the $5. He goes, the one console feature is coming. Read this at the end of 2026. Fair games won't be out. Rich, I want to touch on what you said about Jade Raymond, because I think it would be fair to say not games she's worked on, games she's been associated with. Because most of her games don't drop out. Yeah. They don't come. Like,
that's true.
She goes to these studios, is her name is tied to a game or a studio, and then we don't hear shit. She's been writing the coattails of Assassin's Creed for fucking like almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't think that name means anything, to be honest. Let's prove me wrong, man. But yeah, I'm not surprised by this. And wouldn't this be the 11th live service game that's going to be potentially delayed? What happened? It was supposed to be 12. Now we only got Marathon's going to be the last one then? Very interesting, man.
But let me just have one last comment. You know, I know you said that I was excited for this game. No, that is our boy Chris. He is the one that was excited for this game. Ever since they announced, oh, there's a live service game, another live service game. I can't wait to play that game.
Yeah, Chris, what do you think of fucking fair games?
I hate to disappoint Rich, but I was not looking forward to this one. I don't think blue-haired Robin Hoods is a good idea. But I had my rant before about using that budget for some story-driven narrative games with IPs that people know or care about. But I think that game went in the wrong direction. I think Sony realizes it went in the wrong direction. And instead of, if it was me, I would just cancel it. But I'm not in charge of anything. They're going to put money in to course correct it. Now, what that looks like in 2026, I don't know. Torrance may be right. The game won't come out. Or it ends up like Concord. It comes out, and then 10 days later, it's like, if they do that, that would be insane. If they have another Concord, I think one's enough. I think if you outdo an E.T. at this point, in gaming is insane, but if you do it twice, I don't know, that's not a good look. But I don't care about that game. I am not, if there's like the if I you could call it live service game, I do care about I just want to play Monster Hunter Wilds. That's gives me everything I need. And that's escapism, right? That's like high fantasy, and then you play with your boys or whatever. Same thing why I like the Souls games, but, you know, there's nothing in the, I don't care if you like PvP, if you like Overwatch, that's great. But again, if you're going to try to outdo what's hot now, like Marvel Rivals, how you do that? Like, you have to have a value proposition that can outdo Marvel Rivals. That means you got great-looking characters, great mechanics, great environments, great gameplay. Like, you have to outdo the other guy or else nobody's moving over. I don't think they're confident they have any of that. So that's what I think is going on.
Yeah. Torrance says nobody would care if Jade Raymond wasn't hot. I mean, if she wasn't attractive, I don't know about the hot part anymore. It's been 20 years, but yeah. I don't disagree with that. I'm looking at the trailer for Fair Games right now because I forgot what this fucking shit was about. I'm like, oh yeah, it's one of these type of games, you know? Oh, let's go against the system. But, like, okay.
I find it ironic. It's a game that's supposedly against the, but it's called Fair Games with a money sign.
With a money sign, yeah.
What is that? What do they call it? It's not neural ludonarrative dissonance, but there's literally, it's a game that's literally meant to abuse people's wallets, right? Going against the system, but yet has a giant money sign at the end of the thing.
But that's the irony, man. That's the statement.
It's an utter silly premise, because it's like you're going against the system, but you're literally totally a part of the system, and you are a part of the problem. Your product is a part of the problem.
That's true. I agree. Carlos, what were you going to say, Bruce?
If this game doesn't come out, I would lean towards saying that Jade Raymond is a professional Hassan.
You know,
because this would be ridiculous.
She has for years. We always hear about, okay, Jane Raymond's on a new studio. She's working on a game. Oh, that game unfortunately was canceled. All right, next one. Oh, she's got a new studio, and oh, you know, it was at Google. Unfortunately, it was canceled. Stadia. Now we're going to see hopefully we won't see this again. Stadia, hopefully yeah. something comes out of any of this stuff, because it just, I mean, from the outset, I mean, granted, she does have her, you know, her past glories with the Assassin's Creed thing, but officially that's all she's got. And she doesn't make the games themselves. She's a producer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not like the game director. There is a game. It's funny how like that Assassin's, like how she got so associated with Assassin's Creed when she was just the marketing
person. Yeah. No, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, obviously she was the face of it because she was the one that, you know, the compelling person that they would talk to all the time. You kind of saw the director always sitting to the right or left of her. But for the most part, she didn't make Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, she didn't. It's crazy, man. All right. Moving on here. Dumeke. Right. Did the Activision Blizzard and Bethesda acquisition put the nail in the coffin for the Xbox console business?
I mean, in general, software is the king, right?
Yeah.
And they invested in software.
Yeah. The nail was set long before that acquisition.
Yeah.
The beginning of the end all started with our boy Don Matrick. That's where it all started, and they were never able to recover.
Agree. Yeah, that was the beginning of the end. So all this stuff, you know, it's still taking a while to show dividends. So
now officially the dividends, you know, on the onset, it just looks like to the executives. Oh, hey. Our game business is doing well. Great. You did a great job, Phil, by buying these other companies.
You know? Yeah. It's like, you know, being a team and you get the best player. It's like we're one of the best players. And it's like, we did a team.
But at the same time, like you look at the behind the other stuff. It's like they're already closing down studios. They closed down Tango. They're cutting some stuff on the insides and all kinds of other funky things. So, you know, they're. It definitely seems like paradise, but you know, when you dig a little bit deeper, you can see that they're they got to figure out how they're going to pay for this monster that they essentially got. It's doing good for them, but at the same time, it's like, what was the cost?
That's $67 billion.
I mean, what was the cost as far as like as far as you know, unique IP or new titles or any of that? Now yeah. It's like, okay, now we're the Call of Duty, Halo, Gears of War company. Oh, and we make some RPGs that will probably.
Yeah.
Like here's the one thing about Microsoft is that, you know, in this situation, they will make no qualms about closing any one of those studios, no matter how big they are, and essentially licensing the IP to some other studio to make.
Yeah, they probably will.
You know?
All right, man, let's move on here.
I'm surprised Double Fine is still there.
I don't know.
Like, what the Avowed. Fuck are those guys doing?
Yeah, I don't know about Avowed. I mean, we'll see if that game does well. I know it's reviewing well, but, you know, we'll see how it does. I don't really, you know, again, I don't really have any opinion on that, on Avowed.
Mm-hmm.
You
haven't disavowed it yet?
No, I haven't. Yeah, because again, I'm not, you know, the only Obsidian game I've ever played was The Outer Worlds. I didn't like that game very much. So if this is more of that, I'm like, I think I'm good, bro. All right, another one from Asira and Air Force. After playing around with the ROG Ally, I must say playing on consoles is much simpler than on PC. Do you agree? I mean, yeah, that's why consoles do better, simpler. You know, in the interest of fairness, playing on consoles is becoming more cumbersome. You turn on your console, oh, gotta do an update. You know, gotta do all this shit. So it's like almost the same. And then the thing is, with PC, you may have an initial like hurdle doing all this stuff, but once you get everything up and going, you're fine. Just fire up Steam, hit play, and start.
Well, I think that's the thing. Like, is Steam version of the ROG Ally?
No, there is no Steam version of ROG Ally.
There's no Steam version. So, well, yeah. Well, there's your problem. Mm-hmm, you're literally dealing with fucking Windows.
Yeah. Tony, am I a Fallout guy? No, I only played 4. Actually, excuse me, I played 3 and 4, and 3 was one of the worst experiences I ever had. I was playing that shit on PlayStation, you know?
Oh, man.
I played.
And he still liked that game, too.
I still liked it. I still got the platinum. I remember one of my friends recommended, it was Big John, I think. He recommended, he's like, oh, man, this is a game you could play for months and months. I'm like, oh, yeah? That sounds like a challenge to me. 2 weeks, bro. got the platinum, and with the DLCs too. But yeah, not, you know, it's, I played Fallout 4, and I think I'm good, you know, to be honest. Damn it, Kishak, you threw my fucking train of thought off. I don't even remember what the hell I was talking about. I legit don't remember what I was talking about. Oh yeah, PC game, okay, ROG Ally, yes, yeah, I... Console, okay, Windows 11 sucks on handhelds because trying to navigate Windows on a little screen with your fucking fingers and shit, it's a pain in the ass. Hey, I know you may say, Tony, why don't you use the controls? It don't fucking work. You know, for the most part, they don't work. You have to navigate with your fingers and sit on that little 7-inch screen. So there's your problem. You know, it's not, it's not really PC gaming versus console gaming. It's really more handheld PC gaming versus console. And yeah, it is way more shit you have to go through on that little fucking handheld on for Windows 11. You have to, if you had the Steam version, it would be effectively like the console experience, just handheld. So the problem is, so it's not really that PC gaming is that much more difficult. It's that fucking PC gaming on a handheld. That's the problem, bro. You know? HDR blows on Windows. Yes, man, don't get me started on that shit. You know, like I'm not gonna get, I could literally go off for another 30 minutes about that shit. I've got through so many headaches during me testing gaming monitors and shit, and then trying to get HDR on. Pain in the fucking ass, Bren. And I thought it was me being retarded or something. Come to find out other people in the office having the same issues, you know? Anyway, so yeah, the problem is, it's just Windows 11 sucks on handhelds, bro. That's the problem, you know? But yeah, PC gaming easier than it used to be, and console gaming more complex than it used to be, so we're kind of evening things out, you know? Fucking every time, man, load up a place, and, oh, updates. Like, what is this, Windows? Windows is always doing that shit, too, you know? Have you played Titmonger? I don't think that's a real game, Torrance. Actually, it may be on VR. I know the freaky VR games you play. You know?
The ones that require the beads?
Yeah, the beads. Remember that shit, Torrance? They need to put the SteamOS on hell on faster. Yeah, hey, it's coming. The Lenovo Legion Go West will have a Steam version in April or so. That's good. That's the one to get. Titmonger. Torrance is crazy. All right, we don't need to go. I've rambled on about Windows 11 on hell for many, many months or years, probably at this point. All right, moving on here. Jolly Yellow Nerd, who was in the chat before, so hopefully he's still there. TV or monitor for PlayStation 5? I use a TV because TV is better than my monitor, you know, but, you know, for some others, it may be the other way around. All right, a Jolly Yellow Nerd. What is a currently popular game mechanic that bothers you? I've been thinking about this question. I still don't have the answer. Go ahead, Carlos.
Weapon fragility. It's the classic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you, dude. Weapon fragility, encumbrance. You know, I don't like that shit. I said it too. Weapon fragility. There you go.
The encumbrance one, I give more leeway because it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, but... But yeah, the encumbrance one is kind of, it pisses me off, especially for those games. There's some games, man. Let me tell you, there's some games, and I can't think of one right now, but you'll think about it when I say it, where you have so many things that you can pick up within, you know, like 10 minutes of playing the game. There's like hundreds and hundreds of stuff that you can pick up, and then you're encumbered like after picking up half of them, and you're just playing through 10 minutes of the game. That's the type of stuff that pisses me off.
Yeah, Jolly Yellow Nerd is there. He goes, weapon fragility was my exact answer. It ruined Breath of the Wild for me. Same here, bro.
It ruined it for me, too.
Absolutely ruined the game for me. You know, like...
Didn't we rant about that?
We did many, many times. Yeah. It's because of the weapon fragility that I actively avoided battles whenever possible because my weapons would just fucking break. I hate... That ruined the entire game for me, the weapon fragility bullshit. You know, I'm like, this is why you motherfuckers keep losing a Ganondorf for thousands of years because your weapons keep breaking, you know?
Well, that's only Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm saying that for that game, you know?
He's the weako.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, fuck
OG
that.
OG Link, all he needed to do is have extra hearts and he could throw lasers out of his...
And here's the thing with the weapon fragility. It has to make sense. Like the Dark Souls games and Demon Souls, they had weapon fragility, but it wasn't like every five strokes, bro. you know?
Yeah, and you could repair your shit.
Yeah, you repair your shit, you know? And I guess something adjacent to weapon fragility in like Monster Hunter would be sharpening your thing. But that makes sense. You're hitting a fucking monster. You're going to have to eventually, you know, file this shit. But again, you don't have to do it after 5 strokes, you know?
And now you can do it on riding your mount.
You know?
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
Isn't it great? It's like, yeah, it not only is it game changing in between, like, you know, when the monster runs off, but it's like you're in the middle of it, like, oh, my shit is dull. Let me get on this thing, ride around the monster so I don't get hit while I'm sharpening my shit. You know? It's great. Oh, yeah, yeah. Weapon fragility, the absolute worst. And then for me, followed by encumbrance. I hate encumbrance so much. Like, why? What do you mean I can't pick up more shit? Let me pick it up, you know? Does anybody have anything against, you know, yellow markers to tell you where to go? Because I know a lot of people complain about that.
You mean the yellow markers on just for you to walk on?
Yeah.
I think it's gotten a little bit annoying for the fact that because it means that the level designers can't design something where you can.
It's intuitive. Yeah.
See the difference between these things. So you have to put yellow tape on everything so that everybody knows, okay, that's the ledge that you can jump on.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, like in the old God of War games, what was it? It wasn't yellow. It was like the edges were shinier. They were visually shinier or like stood out a little bit more than the other things. Like, okay, that's something I can climb on. But yeah, now it's like everything's all yellow.
Yeah. Brian, get in here. I know there's probably some modern game mechanics you don't like.
Oh, there's a few. Can I say that I've hated the yellow paint markers since Uncharted, and I know that the Uncharted ones were white, and even since then I've hated. I couldn't stand it when I seen it in Uncharted 1. I'm like, why are the things white? Like, I can clearly see that that's where you have to go to since there's nowhere else you can climb, but why on earth do they have to be white to show you where they are? I did like the birds, though. I like how they put birds as to where you should go so that when you get there, the birds fly away. That makes sense, you know, because that makes more sense than someone having climbed there and put white paint everywhere. Like, stupid to me. So, yeah, so when this whole yellow paint thing came around, I was like, yeah, it's been a thing for years. Like, no one's really noticed until now. It's like, okay, fine, you guys are finally there.
I mean, God of War, the original God of Wars had something like that, but it was never like, it was just the edge was a little bit more shinier or a little bit more, like you just got a little bit more edge that sort of visually stood out from everything else. But yeah, I think a lot of times why they have to do things is because, let's just be honest, they want to make a level that seems like it's realistic, but also at the same time, you know, being that it's realistic, now you have to show the differences between the things that you can interact with and the things that you can't interact with, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but it should be done in a better way than yellow paint. I think that's just, it feels lazy to me, in my opinion. It generally just feels like they said, okay, you know, let's just
put yellow paint and call it a day. It's most definitely lazy.
I just think that there's much better ways of doing it. Again, like the birds in Uncharted 1, I think that's way, way better. A lot better, in my opinion. In terms of other things I don't like, weapon fragility, I'm kind of in the same boat as you guys. I don't mind the concept, but Breath of the Wild did it way too harshly. That was my issue with it, really. That's all that needs to be said with that. And with encumbrance, the only thing I need to say about that is every single game does it wrong apart from SOCOM. Because every single game is all the same. Like, you can be there with 99% and you're fine, and then you pick up one thing, and then suddenly you slow down, like crawl. It makes no sense. Whereas in SOCOM, it was the more weight you carried, the slower you went, and it was proportional. So obviously, if you load up on like 3-4 landmines, you go very slowly. But then if you load up on 2 landmines, you go faster, but not like instantly crawling. So
you know who does it perfect? You know who does that perfect? You know, it's on brand for us, but Elden Ring.
The encumbrance?
Oh, yeah, because it's like
fat roll and shit like that. Yeah.
Because if you're someone that's just going to, if you're a mage, there's no damn reason why you should be wearing armor that's made for a fucking brute.
Yeah. That's true.
I see that. And the only other thing that I just can't stand is RPGs that have ridiculously meaningless upgrades where it's like, oh yeah, you gain 5% damage to fire. It's like 5%. What difference does that make? Like, don't give me 5%, give me like 100%. Like, make it meaningful that I want to get this upgrade. Now, I understand that Path of Exile has like, it's not really a skill tree, it's a skill forest at that point. So that makes sense because it's massive. But most games that have a skill tree of like maybe 25 things to unlock, and some of them are like, oh yeah, gain 2% critical hit damage. It's like, it makes no fucking difference to anything, you know?
To add to Brian's point, not to add to Brian's point, but sort of like tangentially to Brian's point, having skill trees for games that really don't deserve them, and Manny's about to, you know, be like, what? Oh yeah, that one, God of War. It's like, there's no reason why games like that should have skill trees.
Yeah, that's annoying too. It's like, why? You know? Like you said, it's for specific games, because I don't mind skill trees in other games, you know? Like in Spider-Man, that's perfectly fine. You got a bunch of tech, sure. You know, but God of War, yeah, I don't know about that. And then I don't know if there's a game mechanic, but I hate that whole the color system of loot. You know, it's like, why does it have to be in everything? You know what I'm talking about? Like, you know, blue, ooh, green, yellow, it's stupid. You know,
I have a question.
What's up?
Do you guys, speaking of skill trees, do you guys prefer the skill trees that? For me, like a true RPG is picking a skill tree and only sticking to a skill tree because it only makes sense to pick that skill tree.
Yeah, like if you're like a knight and shit, just pick stuff that's good for combat instead of like picking magic. Yeah, I tend to do that, yeah.
As opposed to a game like Spider-Man where it's like, we'll just get everything.
Yeah, even I like that too because then you're not missing nothing. You know, so
yeah, I mean, that's sort of the God of War thing. Like the old God of War didn't have a skill tree per se, but it did have a thing you just unlocked it. You know, you unlock things because of all the, you know, that those red orbs or red blood that you always can't, you know, was always can't gather. Right. I don't mind that idea, especially for a game like it's like, okay, so it gives you the idea that there's some sort of, so you're getting stronger, that stuff. But again, like, if you go to you know Dad of War, they have all these skill trees, and I'm sure everybody has their combo, their one combo that they always use all the damn time.
Yeah,
they barely touch any of the other things.
That's true, right? That's me. I feel attacked. But I do that with every fucking hack and slash game. I find that one optimal combo, and that's all I do for the rest of the game because I'm like, why change it if it works for every situation? You know. All right. Anybody else annoying game mechanics?
Yeah, I think we covered it.
Yeah, the weapon fragility is a big one for all of us.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right. Here's another one from Mr. Jolly Yellow Nerd. Kind of related.
Roguelikes and wait for that for the last one. Roguelikes and
yeah, that's not a game mechanic. That's just a genre. You know.
Yeah, it's a game.
It's a genre.
You gotta die.
Yeah, I don't like them either. I think they're trash. But that should be a question for what genres do you hate? I could name a lot of them. but Manny, you can't say, yeah, dying and losing all your shit, that's a game mechanic, you know? Like, or I also don't, you know, so kind of. I don't know if procedure generated worlds, that's not a game mechanic, that's more game design. Somebody asks us that question for the future. What game design do you hate?
Yeah, there you go.
And like, you know, we could be positive around here. All right, what is an underused game mechanic that you would like to see more of? I'm going to say the obvious because this game mechanic is owned by a fucking studio. They won't give it to anybody else. You know what I'm about to say, man. you know?
Nemesis.
The Nemesis system. Fucking amazing, you know? But it's locked behind WB, man. They don't give it to everybody. But it's such a great thing, you know? It really makes games dynamic.
Yeah.
So that's a great answer, Tony.
Yeah.
And let me just say this. Don't worry, it will be available to a lot more people once WB closes down the studio that currently is using
it. Yeah.
That Wonder Woman game they're working on?
Do you mean the game that's never right coming out?
Yeah. That's the nail in the coffin, I think.
All right, since Rich is talking, I'll answer for him.
Uh-oh.
The most The most underutilized game mechanic is the one that allows you to play Concord.
Oh shit. Yeah. Nintendo might sue me for this, but I like capturing creatures by throwing a ball mechanic.
Oh, that's it.
There you go. That's an underutilized mechanic, you know, for obvious reasons.
They're checking their patents right now.
Yeah, so. Asira Nerf Force said that. That's a good one. That's a good one. All right. Brian, you got anything underutilized game mechanics you want to see more of?
I want to see more games with environmental takedowns.
Whoa, there you go.
Still to this day, I still think of all the different ways to take people down in Sleeping Dogs. And it's just like, yeah, that was so great and so much fun. You know, like, you just don't get that as much these days. I think the closest that we got since was the Arkham games. But even then, they weren't like, oh, yeah, you're like throwing a guy through an AC vent. You're like drowning a guy in a fish tank. You're closing a shutter on someone's chest. Like, no, there's none of that.
Like the Punisher game.
Yeah, the Punisher. I was thinking the same thing. Punisher on Xbox had that. That's I remember true. Taking a mafia dude and I put him in like a dry cleaner press and then his Punisher just shut the shit out of him and fries him in it. I'm like, damn, that game had great environmental takedowns.
Yeah. Speaking about superhero games, like the Wolverine game that Activision put out, they had this really cool mechanic where, like, if you keep doing a specific like attack against an enemy, once you level it up, like that thing will just kind of almost instantly kill them. So it's like a smarter way of leveling up in an RPG, you know? Because it's like Wolverine learned how to take down a Sentinel. Why is it always taking the exact same amount of strength every time? It makes sense if he just learns how to do it faster. If he kills, like, if you kill 100 of any cap enemy, it should just be like, okay, I know how to kill these guys now faster. It shouldn't just be the same shit all the time. But no games do that, really, you know? It's like, it's weird. Like in Spider-Man, imagine if they have a mechanic, it's like, yeah, if you're fighting against normal humans, just punch them once and they're done, you know? That's what would really happen. Spider-Man fighting regular people, you know, but it's like you're doing combos on these dudes, you know? It's like, wait, what? Like, why is this homeless guy taking combos, you know?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously you need to play as Mary Jane, where she can one-shot Kraven's hunter squad with a taser.
Jesus. Horrible. All right, man. And the last question of the night.
I had one more.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
One of my favorite mechanics that never was used anywhere else was the waypoint system from Dead Space.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I love that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, just it lays down that laser and you can follow it. It's like, okay, I need to get to a save room. I need to get here. I need to follow the mission and just puts down the laser. That's no yellow line. That shit was clutch.
Yeah.
Especially when you're like, I'm all fucked up. I need to go save the game.
And that was great. Yeah.
The navigation on it was also like, it didn't, like some of the navigation to other games where it's like you see it in Monster Hunter, actually. Well, you see the little green things are going one direction. And then you're like, nah, man, I don't want to go that way. I'm going to go this way because it's quicker to get over there. You know?
No. And the thing was smart, too, because the Ishimura stuff, some of the places were multi-level. The laser would tell you what level to go on.
Yep.
Like, there's modern waypoint systems that it's like, hey, you're here. And it's like, no, obviously the thing is not here. And then you realize you're either a level above it or below it. And it just points the point at the same place, right? No, the Dead Space one was fucking legit. It would the laser would go into the ceiling like, yep. No, you got to go
like,
up there.
Like, oh, shit. Okay. Yeah, that was smart. Yeah.
I would say one for and this is for Adam, who's not here right now, was for the Mafia games, where essentially, you know...
The roadie run. There you go.
The roadie run. But there's also the Mafia, you did have a waypoint, but it didn't give you a visual, like a line or anything on the road. What it did was it generates signs to tell you which way to go. So they would be in the environment to be able to tell you, okay, make the next left or, you know, make the next right. You know, like it was, so it was, what do they call it? What are they, like the Dead Space guy has his power bar on his back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's his health on his back. Yeah.
Whatever that is called. I can't remember what they call that. Where, in other words, you have things in the game that tell you what you need to do, but it doesn't have any HUD. And that mafia, the way it worked is like, okay, signs. You just follow the signs that just appear and it'll get you.
Pretty cool. All right. Anybody else underutilized game mechanics? All right. Now,
you know, Roadie Run, Roadie Run might even be a licensed.
Could be.
Aspect. And maybe the reason why we don't see something like that is because even though not, it is just a run button, you just bring in. But theoretically.
Yeah, it's just a run button. The camera kind of does a cool angle.
Angle. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Last question of the night. This is a sponsor question from Mr. Ace Ali, sponsoring one of Black Metal's questions. So thank you for sponsoring that one. What games with four stealth missions angered you and ruined the pacing of the game?
Spider-Man 2.
Oh, shoot.
Mary Jane. Yeah. Carlos, that's a perfect answer.
Yeah, it really is.
Both Spider-Man games.
Both of them,
No, but the second one was even worse. It was,
More egregious.
The Miles ones were pretty bad. And
you know what's funny about four stealth? Around the time when that became kind of an accusation, I didn't mind it. Because I was just I already like Metal Gear. So I'm like, I don't mind this shit. The first one, I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? Was Uncharted 4. Remember those four stealth missions when you're like a little kid and shit? And even in the museum when you're an adult? I'm like, oh, all right, bro, what is this? But yeah, no, I agree with you guys. Those Spider-Man 4 stealth missions were fucking bullshit.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about stealth. And whenever it's implemented, it's forced.
It's bad.
Like Splinter Cell used to. Where as soon as you get seen, everything ends.
Yeah.
No, three alarms, Fisher. That's right,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cancel the mission, Fisher.
Cancel the mission. Bitch, I'm in the middle of Russia. I can't just end it now.
Exactly. So it's if you're gonna do it. Do it right and don't do why are we playing these? I get it, we want to give a little bit variety to the game, but at any point, any of those side characters that ever shown up in some of those games like the Spider-Man games, did you even give a shit?
Yeah.
other than having your main characters that can
All right, anybody here's else
one for you. What's up? Here's one that's gonna make Chris just go into a blind rage. Lord of Shadow 2.
Oh, I was thinking of that, Brian. Damn, you reached into my brain. That's fucking weak-ass Dracula. You got to sneak past the soldiers.
Oh, my God, yes. Bullshit.
In a game where he wanted to die as well. It's like,
yeah.
So he died, so I won the game, but I lost the game? How does that make sense?
Oh, my God, Brian, that's a great answer, because I was thinking of that. I'm like, that bullshit sequel was a shadow.
Yeah, Lord's just, oh, my God, that was terrible. Both of those games, yeah.
The first one didn't have, I don't remember that having mandatory.
No, it didn't.
That didn't have stealth. The second one, though. Oh.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else for stealth? All right. Guess we're done with that. So we're done for the show. Good stuff. Couple of things. The latest episode of the Invincible podcast, the greatest podcast in the universe, is now up on the Coalition's YouTube channel. Dana's back with us this time. Lots of fun. We're covering episode 4, which means we are now officially at the halfway point. And yeah, Chris, like I said, the door's open, man. If you want to come.
Oh, next time. I'm gonna catch up. Yeah.
Yeah. But have you been watching it though, or cause I know you've tried to, and then Olivia.
I'm behind. I'm at episode 2. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, good stuff. Yeah, Invincible's the shit. Go watch that. Don't go watch Captain America. Watch some real shit.
No, please don't waste money on
that bullshit. So that's what's going on there. Rich, what else is coming up on the Coalition this week?
Oh, yes. Well, it's going to be an extremely busy week at the Coalition. Now, as Tony already mentioned, Invincible Podcasts, episode 4 is out. We will be recording the next episode this upcoming weekend. So stay tuned for that. I just recorded a review with Dana for a movie that's coming out later this week called The Monkey.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is a horror comedy movie, and it was quite surprising. So I would definitely tell you guys, stay tuned for that review. That will be up later this week. We have our very good friend, Mr. Adam Vale. He has a show that he has been working on related to the Reacher series. That will also be debuting later this week. So stay tuned for that. And as for the gaming stuff, a lot of reviews and previews coming this week. We have a review coming for Yakuza Pirate this week. We have a review coming for Lost Records also this week. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's made by the same people that made Life is Strange. Don't nod. Not the other team. Okay, so that means this actually might be you know, something worth looking forward to. So stay tuned for those reviews. And there's plenty of other reviews, previews, stuff I can't talk about, but I would just say it's going to be very busy on the website this week as well as the YouTube, so definitely stay tuned.
Good stuff, good stuff. All right, man, we're out of here, so make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter, subscribe on YouTube, join the Discord, and follow us on your favorite podcast app. Links for everything down below. Once again, I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good week, everybody.
And Brian Majoma.
Later, people.
All right, guys, you already know. Thursday, later.
Jesus.